Coming up on Fronteras, the federal government is poised to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on new border security technology. One major contract is for surveillance towers that use cameras and radar to detect activity in the desert.
Our agents can then determine whether that sweep is picking up, whether it's an animal, whether it's a person, whether it's a vehicle.
How the contracting process has changed in light of past mistakes. Across the Southwest, local groups are working to get the word out about how uninsured people can sign up for health coverage starting October 1st.
There's a lot of misconceptions out there, so we want to put a human face to these folks and say, here are the facts about what happens October 1st.
We look at the challenges of getting the word out to non-English speakers, but first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations. It's funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as part of its local Journalism Center initiative. I'm Crystal Chavez. Across the Southwest, groups are canvassing neighborhoods to inform people who are uninsured about how to sign up for coverage under Obama's Affordable Care Act starting October 1st. But getting the message across is a difficult task, especially reaching groups that may not speak English well. We begin in Phoenix with Fronteras desk reporter Jude Joffe Block.
Last Saturday, a handful of volunteers showed up to learn how to spread the word about the new health care law. Stan Williams, an organizer with the national nonprofit Enroll America, quizzed the volunteers on the essentials before they hit the streets.
What date does open enrollment begin?
October 1.
October 1st.
What date does coverage begin?
January
1st.
Similar canvas trainings like this played out over the weekend in several states across the country. While it's laborious to go door to door, Enroll America believes these conversations are best to have in person. Some of their key talking points? Letting people know they might be eligible for financial assistance for insurance. They can't be charged more if they have pre-existing conditions, and help will be available from trained navigators to choose a plan. Stan Williams.
There's a lot of misconceptions out there, so we want to put a human face to these folks and say, here are the facts about what happens October 1st.
But there's a challenge for any of these efforts. Of Arizona's million uninsured, about 30% are foreign-born, and a portion of those don't speak much English. So groups like this know they'll also need translated materials and bilingual messengers.
I'm Kate Sheehy in Las Vegas. Driving along Spring Mountain Road here, you see shopping centers packed with Korean, Japanese, and Vietnamese businesses. Edward Dianse is like many people in this community. He knows very little about Obamacare. He's from the Philippines.
There's like a lot of things to change, but I don't really know the details.
According to the 2011 census, about 18% of Asian Americans in Nevada are uninsured. Emily Higby is the business development director for the Asian Community Resource Center. She says her group is struggling to get the word out about Obamacare. She says there's no local broadcast media in the various Asian languages, and on top of that, they often can't even communicate with each other.
We can't even have a meeting of the Vietnamese and the Chinese and the Japanese in one room because you have to translate.
Dan Heffley is helping Higby's group understand the law and to make their efforts more visible. He is a volunteer with the Governor's Office for Consumer Health Assistance.
Oftentimes, you get different demographics that like to stay under the radar, and they're really not aware of how it affects them.
Heffley says it's going to take a long time for everyone to be on the same page. He says the Obama administration may realize that their time frames were too short.
I'm Tristan Ottone in Albuquerque. Another group that's having difficulty learning about the Affordable Care Act is Native Americans. A new report from the Government Accountability Office, or GAO, finds that most Native Americans would be eligible for expanded Medicaid, tax credits, or basic health care under the Act. The GAO's Kathleen King says the report also looked at outreach efforts by the Indian Health Service to promote enrollment in the new program.
We found that there was not a lot of widespread information about the expanded eligibility.
In states along the border, Texas to California, it's estimated that over 317,000 tribal members may be eligible for expanded Medicaid services alone. And at the moment, Texas is the only state in the Southwest that has opted not to expand services.
Given the fact that so many are going to be eligible for expanded coverage, we would hope that as many as possible would take advantage of that, because it is access to a broader range of services.
The GAO report finished interviews in February. The Indian Health Service says they're now ready to start implementing ACA benefits in Indian country. Jeffrey Roth is a spokesman for IHS.
We're doing everything we can within our IHS-operated facilities. I know tribes are doing the same thing and planning to do the same thing, and urban Indian programs are as well.
Unlike the rest of the population, Native Americans are exempt from the mandate to purchase coverage, and they will not pay financial penalties if they do not sign up. Still, with a majority of Native people living in urban areas without access to care through IHS, the ACA could fill in those insurance gaps. In Albuquerque, I'm Tristan Ottone.
With Congress back to work, immigration reform advocates are ramping up their efforts to get a bill passed before the end of the year. But debate over the federal deficit in Syria are threatening to push immigration reform to the bottom of the legislative agenda. Pro-reform groups held a rally in San Diego on Monday. Frontera's reporter Jill Replegal has more.
We will stand as one.
Labor, immigration, business, and faith leaders spoke at a rally in downtown San Diego on Monday, asking Congress to pass comprehensive immigration reform. Mayoral candidate and Qualcomm exec Nathan Fletcher addressed the crowd in his role as chairman of San Diegans United for Common Sense Immigration Reform. The group includes business interests, labor, law enforcement, and agriculture. It came together earlier this year to agree on a set of principles for reforming the nation's immigration system, including a pathway to citizenship for people in the country illegally. Here's Fletcher.
And if we can do it here in San Diego, we know our leaders in Washington, D.C. can do it. And so we stand here today united as one community, calling for one solution that treats people with respect and dignity, that allows our economy to grow, that allows our communities to be safe, and addresses this problem once and for all.
Another mayoral candidate was also at the rally. Councilman David Alvarez said he and other local leaders wouldn't let Congress get out of addressing immigration. Pro-immigration reform groups are planning an intense lobbying campaign for the coming months to try and convince the House of Representatives to take up the immigration reform bill passed by the Senate in June. But some observers think it's increasingly likely the House will put the issue aside for the foreseeable future. In San Diego, I'm Jill Replegal.
In the coming months, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of contracts will be finalized for new surveillance technology along the Southwest border. From the Frontera's desk in Phoenix, Jude Joffe Block reports that past mistakes are now dictating the way the federal government is awarding these contracts.
This is the Joint Intelligence and Operations Coordination Center for Customs and Border Protection in Tucson. Some of the most advanced technology on the border is on display here. In many ways, it's a model for what's to come elsewhere on the border. About 20 agents sit at desks facing large video monitors. When they fly drones over remote patches of desert, this is where the video comes in. Today, the monitors show what cameras on the border fence see. Agent Mark Mitchell points to one monitor that looks black and white, but is actually displaying heat. He says this is an added tool for agents.
It'll help them see people hide in the bushes a little bit easier versus a day camera. They can get lost in the brush.
Customs and Border Protection, or CBP, wouldn't allow me to visit the building next door. But that's where agents receive information from over a dozen surveillance towers in the desert that use both cameras and radar. They're called integrated fixed towers. Their radar sweep for drug smugglers and illegal border crossers, and they transmit video.
Our agents can then determine whether that sweep is picking up, whether it's an animal, whether it's a person, whether it's a vehicle.
Those fixed towers were originally put up by the contractor Boeing. They're still functional, but the bigger project Boeing tried to create, an elaborate virtual fence called SBINet that would integrate radar, cameras, and sensors all along the Southwest border, was deemed a failure. Thad Bingle is with Command Consulting in Washington and used to be the chief of staff at CBP.
The issue with SBINet was it was overly ambitious.
There were missed deadlines, system bugs, and high costs. After pouring $1 billion into it without the expected results, then Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano canceled SBINet in 2011, and it prompted CBP to rethink how it approaches border technology.
It really caused an examination within the agency of going back and saying, okay, you know, we tried to design a system that kind of did a lot of things but didn't do it all very well. So let's focus instead on what do you actually need in these different places.
What they've decided they need in southern Arizona is a $1.5 billion plan over a decade that includes more cameras and more integrated fixed towers. This summer, CBP already awarded General Dynamics $96 million to do the remote video surveillance piece. And the competition for the contract to put up more integrated fixed towers is heating up. The exact dollar figure is unknown, but it's likely to be in the neighborhood of several hundred million. It'll be the single biggest ground surveillance contract since SBINet. But this time, the contracting process has changed.
There are a lot of things different.
Mark Borkowski works for CBP's Office of Technology, Innovation, and Acquisition. That's a new office set up to prevent SBINet size mistakes. So this time, CBP doesn't want to see just paper proposals. Half a dozen finalist companies had to build a model and prove their towers work on their own dime. The agency wants the fixed towers to be able to spot a single person walking during the day or night up to about 7 miles away. This June, the finalists, which reportedly include Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, and General Dynamics, showed off their towers in the desert. They were tested on
how far can your camera see, how far can your radar see, and how confident, how likely is it that if there's something out there, it will actually see it. We call that probability of detection.
Some outside analysts are applauding the agency for taking a more risk-averse approach. Werner Dahm directs a security research institute at Arizona State University.
Having something that works in place and can do the job well is better than having something that maybe is more spectacular from a technology point of view, but that ultimately doesn't end up working.
CBP is expected to name a winner for the integrated fixed towers contract by the end of the year. In Phoenix, I'm Jude Joffe Block.
There's still more Fronteras coming up. How some defense contractors and tech firms are seeing the border as a potential business opportunity.
Many of the companies who in the last decade relied on that spending and who developed great new technologies for application overseas in Iraq or Afghanistan, they are looking for a customer to replace that.
More on how immigration reform talks have created anticipation for possible increases in border security spending. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. Some defense contractors and private sector tech companies are looking at the southwest border as a new opportunity. Immigration reform, if it passes, likely will include new funds for security and border enforcement. And that's generating a buzz among companies who see dollar signs. From the Fronteras desk in Phoenix, Jude Joffe Block reports.
Imagine this scenario. An intruder hops a fence and starts to walk in a forbidden zone. Instantly, a camera senses his movement, spins around to record him, and detects he's a human, not wildlife. An alarm like that would alert agents back at a command center. They would get a video of the intruder and his geo-coordinates. As it turns out, a Phoenix-based company, Pure Tech Systems, makes software that does exactly this. Larry Bow is the company president.
You'll notice that as this target moves, this person, the camera is panning, tilting, and zooming simultaneously to keep him in the center of the image.
Bow's software isn't being used at the border, but he wants to be ready in case there's a future need. Other companies are also getting ready, mostly huge defense contractors, but also small niche companies that specialize in things like thermal imaging or laser-based sensors that detect when fences are being tampered with. Some make products you never would think of.
We'll call it a pee bag or a poo bag.
Paul Chiba works for an Escondido-based company called Brief Relief. They make sanitary baggies with chemicals inside to neutralize odors and prevent the spread of bacteria. One of their main customers has been the military out in the deserts of Iraq and Afghanistan. But Chiba says if there are more boots on the ground in the southwest border region,
after a while, they're all going to have to use the restroom at some point or another, and our products are perfect for that.
It's immigration reform negotiations in Washington that are driving hopes for new spending on the border. At a recent town hall, Arizona Senator Jeff Flake explained that when he and others were working on the technology provisions of the Senate's immigration bill, they went to the heads of each border sector and asked,
what new technology do you need? What manpower? What infrastructure?
And they gave us a punch list. Here's what we need to achieve 90% effectiveness. And that is in the legislation.
The list in the Senate bill is surprisingly specific, naming over 25 categories of technology and the exact number of units for each sector. For example, the San Diego sector would get precisely 393 ground sensors, 41 remote video surveillance systems, and one radiation detector, among other things. One businessman who has high hopes of such a tech-heavy bill passing is Lori Payne. He works in the Burbank, California office of a company called Grabba Inc. That's a subsidiary of an Australian company.
If the funding for extra border security gets passed, we can expect orders in the range of several million dollars to be placed with us. That's our expectation.
Grabba makes a gadget that lets law enforcement use smartphones or tablets to check IDs, passports, and fingerprints. It's already being used by some Border Patrol agents.
They can go into a vehicle such as a bus, for example, and check all the passengers on the bus without the passengers having to leave the bus.
If the federal government ups its order, and there's no guarantee they will, Payne claims his company will start manufacturing the devices here in the U.S., which would create domestic jobs.
It is and can be a really game changer for us.
And a border security boost would come at a good time for many of these companies used to high levels of defense spending. Thad Bingle is a Washington-based consultant who previously was chief of staff at Customs and Border Protection.
Many of the companies who in the last decade relied on that spending and who developed great new technologies for application overseas in Iraq or Afghanistan, they are looking for a customer to replace that.
Of course, to many, bringing these new technologies developed for the military in war zones is a frightening prospect. And there's significant pushback, not just from border residents, but from some members of Congress who are reluctant to spend billions more on border enforcement. In Phoenix, I'm Jude Jaffe Block.
Nevada schools have the largest percentage of English language learners in the country. For the first time, states designated funds to go directly towards improving ELL education. The bulk of that money, nearly $40 million, will go to Las Vegas-Clark County School District, the biggest in the state. From our Fronteras desk, Kate Sheehy reports.
Twenty kindergartners gather around teacher Stephanie Shank at Reynaldo Martinez Elementary School in North Las Vegas. They are mimicking her moves to describe the zoo animals in the song. Shank has been teaching at the school for 11 years, and she says over that time, the demographics of the Clark County School District and her classroom have changed dramatically.
It's a very challenging place to teach, 100%. It's takes a lot of energy.
Carla, what are you drawing? What is it?
It's a bathtub.
Oh, is that a birdhouse?
In Shank's classroom, the majority of kids speak little English, and Shank herself speaks only a few words of Spanish. Shank says she uses a lot of visuals and touch and taste methods to teach kids vocabulary.
A lot of pantomiming. I act out. I feel like I'm a clown half the time.
Martinez Elementary is one of the 14 so-called Zoom schools in the district that are receiving the new state funding. These elementary schools have the highest number of children learning English as a second language and the highest number of low-income students in Clark County. The added funding will allow the school to offer smaller class sizes, reading centers that offer tutoring for students struggling with English, and pre-kindergarten, something that is rarely available to low-income students.
We know that, you know, the sooner you get into school, the more fluent you are with your language, and that's what we're looking for.
That's Danielle Miller. She is the academic manager overseeing the Zoom schools. The program is designed to provide a unified curriculum and strategy for teachers and students.
And I think when you see 14 schools work together with very similar populations, you're going to see great strides made at all 14 schools rather than just one here, one here, one here.
Clark County has long been struggling with educating its Spanish-speaking students. A recent study shows that less than half of ELL third graders in the district met state reading standards. By eighth grade, only 10% met those standards. Many here believe the nearly $40 million investment is too little to meet the need. A couple of weeks ago, Sylvia Lazos took part in a rally for teachers and staff from the Zoom schools. She is a law professor at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and was on the district's ELL review board. Lazos estimates there are about 50 elementary schools where half of the students speak Spanish as their first language. So while the new funding is a big step,
it is by far not enough. The blueprint is there. It is still a high-risk proposition because the needs are so great, and it's going to take every teacher that was here today in this auditorium to buy into this dream, to this proposition.
To that end, Zoom School teachers and staff will be getting extra help from a team of trained ELL coaches who will regularly visit classrooms. Classrooms that Lazo says are now full of students from struggling immigrant families.
So when you have that kind of child as being the norm in your school, you have to have a different level of preparation, a different level of teaching strategies.
Even this small pilot program for the Zoom schools is at risk over the long term. Academic manager Danielle Miller.
I think at the end of the 2 years, if the results aren't there, we have to be able to face that criticism, say, well, what happened? Why we gave you all this extra money. Are we saying money doesn't make a difference?
Remember that? Say fruit, fruit, not fruit.
Back in Stephanie Shank's classroom, the school year has just started. Shank says she doesn't know how everything is going to work, but she realizes that this population of students deserves the very best teachers the system can find and train.
Well, I think they come to school way behind, and it's our job. We're not just getting them to go from a third grade education to a fourth grade education. I mean, we have got to make up a big gap. You have to have high standards, and you have to have high expectations, and these kids can do it.
In Las Vegas, I'm Kate Sheehy.
You've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting-funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. Fronteras is online at fronterasdesk.org. We're also on Facebook. We invite you to join the conversations and post your thoughts about our stories. For headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. Our main handle is fronterasdesk. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Our theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.